You're listening to the USEA official podcast, which takes you behind the scenes of eventing, covering all the big events, professional tips and tricks, interviews, special guests, and the latest USEA eventing news. Welcome to the USEA official podcast, episode 289. My goodness, listeners, what a few weeks we have had. Now, this show is actually being released a little after mind have expected because it was due to go out on the Monday that everybody was going to be show jumping in Tokyo. And we thought, you know what? We will hang fire and we will bring you a reaction show instead. So I'm delighted to be joined by my very good friend, a director of decorations, Dermot Byrne, is going to be breaking down the numbers for us as we look back on Tokyo. Dee, how are your energy levels post-Olympics?
Post-Olympics, post the eventing section of the Olympics, Nicole, yes. My energy levels are, yeah, not fully back yet. I'd be lying if I said I was that, if I bounced back that quickly. I haven't bounced back that quickly. I'm on the up again, though, that's for sure. I'm starting to sleep again at night. The time difference while we were on this side of the world for once was against us, so we were working all the way through the night, really, which takes a little bit of time to come back from. But no, all very good. What an exciting few days. Great for the sport. So many stories, so many positives, for the US, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. But yeah, brilliant few days.
Yeah, it really was. I think it was a superb showcase for eventing. I definitely don't bounce back how I would have once bounced back, having pulled all-nighters. I really felt it this week, but it was so good. It was worth every single second. Okay, let's start with the team competition, and then we will go on to some of those standout individual performances as well. But Team GB went in with immense pressure. I think I got quite nervous on quite a few occasions going into an Olympic Games. And it's tough, isn't it, Dee? Because there was so much talk around who was going to be selected. There was a little bit of a worry of would they have run their race in getting selected before they went. But do you know what? Needn't have worried. They were superb.
Yeah, they were superb. They were under pressure as well. I think, you know, talked in the preview a little bit about the pressure and the build-up which happens to kind of these great teams. This is one of the top-rated teams that we've ever seen going into a championship. The German team, Nicole, from 2016, that all-star team that we've talked about so much, they didn't win. You know, so like it isn't, I hate going down the horses aren't machines line because, you know, I think it just gets a bit overused every so often. But it doesn't always follow the numbers, you know. It doesn't always say that these top-rated teams pull through. As you know, so many things have to fall in your favor. But yeah, superb performance from them across all three phases, probably in particularly that cross-country phase. They jumped on the final day without that much pressure, and they have superb jumpers anyway. But I think the show jumping can be a lot more filled with jeopardy when there is another team breathing down your neck. They didn't have that, so they had the luxury of being able to jump with a little bit of without pressure, I suppose, on the final day. They absolutely had pressure on the cross-country day, and that really was poetry in motion, those three cross-country rounds.
Yeah, I think Oliver Townend, for many people, was one of the highlights of the cross-country because he was essentially the pathfinder, the Thai rider who went out as first to go, only made it as far as fence five. So therefore, most of everybody seeing the course for the first time was Oliver's round. He made it look really straightforward. I got a little bit twitchy when he made it look so straightforward and came home inside the time, what appeared to be pretty comfortably. And I thought, oh God, maybe this isn't going to be quite the cross-country test that we thought it might be. Or, you know, it's always that delicate balance at the Olympics, isn't it? Of having lots of different nations of varying strengths and wanting to give a good picture of everybody, but provide enough for competition. As it happened, I think there were something like seven clear rounds inside the time cross country. So, and three of those were Brits. So it wasn't a massive amount. Let me ask you about the record, because they set a new record. The Ekoratings Instagram account and Facebook account, I think, about blew up when their final score was locked in.
So they finished on a score, Nicole. We thought they could do it. They finished on a score of 86.3. What I find interesting about the record, I mean, I think the previous record was about 92, somewhere in that region. I'm sure our Instagram will have it. But
it was 92.
Yeah, was it? So let's say they finished on 86.3. What I find interesting, just as a conversation, I mean, it's an incredible achievement from the three of them. But what are we looking at? That's three scores of 29, 28.5, that kind of region. And I think when you talk to almost any high-performance team, I think they will all basically, I think all these top athletes believe they can deliver a score of sub-30 or 30. I think all of them will also believe they can definitely deliver 32 and below, 34 and below. And they all start looking at you like you've two heads saying, I am an Olympian, or I have been to the World Games, or I've been to the Pan Ams. Of course, I can deliver scores of 34 and below, 33 and below. And what's interesting, Nicole, is actually when you begin to look at individual performances, and what's great for this, you know, this is something that applies across all levels of the sport. But when you begin to look it down at how often you actually do it, you'll find it's not that much. And how often you do it on a day when your two fellow teammates do it is really not that much, which is why that Olympic record was, you know, 92. It was not even the three scores of 30. Now, this all-star team have delivered us three scores of, you know, on average 29, and they've created a new record. I just think it's interesting.
I'd also say
era of the 21s and the 20s.
Yeah, they did it without a drop score as well. Like all of those other teams we're talking about would have had a drop score. In London, where the previous best team finishing score was, they had two drop scores. So I think it adds a whole new dimension, the team of three, to that. I think it makes it even more impressive is what I'm trying to say.
I think you're probably right, Joe. I think that does make it. That it was there. So you're right. They were beating their previous record, and that was 92.8. What's very interesting actually about that is they hold a record, Nicole, and it's actually from London, but they finished second in London.
I love
it. Oh, that's
this.
One for the nerds, isn't it? Okay, well, we won't stay long on this because this is one for the nerds. But yeah, Germany, that's because actually of the dressage, the change in the dressage, but actually it's because of the change in the show jumping scoring. The change in the dressage scoring and the multiplier, that gets plenty of talk. The change in the show jumping scoring like happened, was it probably 2 years ago? And
yeah,
it went from what, 0.5 to 0.4? Is that right?
It went from 1 to 0.4. More than halved.
It actually did kind of sneak in, though. I don't think that many people talked about it. It certainly never gets talked about in the same way. That there's not enough between them. It was the show jumping change that actually flipped them around. For people that don't know what I'm talking about, Germany won in 2012 on a score of 93.2. But if you convert all of these scores, which we do so that we're talking, you know, comparing apples with apples, the Great British score from the same championships, which finished second, actually beats it. So yeah, that they were all, Nicole, to finish that point, all those scores, they were all in the 90s, those record scores. So France in 2004 was 98.4. That was the fourth best score. As you say, though, very good point. Those two 90 low 90 scores from Great Britain and Germany, that was London. That was actually 3 from 5, not even 3 from 4.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
3 from 5 in London.
I'd just point out as well, when you look at the top 10 lowest ever finishing scores from different teams, it's not just all Great Britain and Germany. You've got France, you've got New Zealand, the USA are in there, Australia, Sweden. There's a real mix. It is a really hard thing to do. Much harder than I think it sort of gets talked about quite so much. And actually in the final scores for the team competition, Australia were, I think, around the 100 mark. They weren't a million miles away. They were 100.2. So they would have been up there. France were 101.5. So the USA was 125.8. So, you know, when you're talking about these scores, that sort of puts it all into context. Let's talk about some of the other performances. Before we talk about the US team, I think we should just mention, one, the big shock for Germany, because they would have gone in as second favourites, I think, behind Team GB. Certainly, if you'd have looked at Michael Young's chances, he was very much the favourite to take a third individual gold medal. Certainly, you would have thought he'll be on the podium. The 11 penalties he got for activating a MIM clip, so a safety device out on course, were much talked about. And decorating zone, Sam Watson had same fence where he picked up 11 penalties as well. But ultimately, they are there to make the sport safe, would say on that. There was a lot of talk. Are they going to be removed? Can they contest them? The rules basically say that they are awarded, and that is that. Personally, I think that's the right thing, in so much as soon as you take one off, then why aren't you taking more than one off? And all of a sudden that black and white becomes very grey, and therefore people are going to feel very hard done by. It makes it much trickier. The word on the street, but that sounds a little bit too badass for me. Word is that basically those MIMs were checked after every single competitor jumped them. So they would have been checked throughout the competition as well. So anyway, take that as you will, listeners, but it was a big, big shock that Michael
Wait,
Young...
Nicole, I'm coming.
You're coming. Go on then.
I'm
Go on
climbing
then.
Up onto my soapbox. I think you're right. I think it's actually... I think up until now, and even now, there is a huge amount of respect for what the frangibles and what the MIMs and all of those devices around safety do. I don't think that should prevent us from having a conversation around what happened at the Olympics, because I think it is worthy. I mean, we do our sport an injustice by not having the conversation. We're talking about a two-time Olympic champion bidding to become a three-time Olympic champion, and we didn't see the fence. I think I agree with you in terms of, I think, whether there isn't a right to appeal, whether there should be a right to appeal is a topic of conversation which will happen and should happen. And I'm sure because of the high profile nature of this on Michael, it will at least be a conversation, because you used to be able to appeal, now you can't.
Yeah, you used to be able to, but it used to be chaos. Like it used to be
look, it absolutely used to
horrendous.
Be. It was chaos, but isn't it even... I just think if the camera is there, you can I think most riders will accept the ruling of the grand jury, even if they don't believe it's right, as long as you can see it. It's one of those kind of fundamental kind of pillars of justice, is that it's at least delivered in public to some degree. Like for us not to see that, and for us just to be taking one person's word against another, and for us to be relying on things like, you say, the word on the street, I think that is a little bit amateur for our sport. This is someone who's bidding to become a three-time Olympic champion, and we don't know what happened at defense.
I think that's more around the, and we're getting really political about it now, so we'll move on,
Nicole,
in a second. But I think that's more around how it played out. I think the rules were very clear. And I couldn't imagine that in Olympic Games, things wouldn't be checked that significantly. However, maybe there should be room for discussion afterwards. Maybe they will review the ruling. There is always going to be that degree of subjectivity, because how do you prove that a horse would have fallen and that it would have prevented a fall? You can't, unless there's something far more scientific than, you know, judgment. It is definitely one for discussion, I think, post-Olympic Games. It was a shock. I mean, what a way to stop your bid. He had a pole down in the final round of show jumping, which in theory, if he'd have taken those 11 penalties away, he would have taken the individual silver, not won anyway. But it's very easy different, to say, yeah, well, he wasn't jumping in that position and everything else. It's very different to jump in 10th rather than the individual gold medal position. But it is a real good conversation, I'm sure.
It's a talking point,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think how it gets played out, you know, probably took everybody by surprise a little bit. And social media these days is so good for so many things, but all of a sudden word of mouth and social media gets really complicated. And sort of everybody has different opinions flying around and everything else. And let's move on from the dramas of Germany. They also had a 20 penalties cross country with the former world champion Sandra Offorth, which was costly for them as well. We'll come on to their individual gold medalist a little bit later. Team Silver went to Australia, who I had been championing quite a bit for the last few months. But I would say they were a team that actually did have quite a few changes. And they had, I think, 2-3 changes within their squad by the time the squad came to sort of the starting line. Kevin McNabb came in for Stuart Tinney, and your heart goes out to him because, you know, that him alongside the likes of Thomas Carlisle, who was sort of the big favourite from France, and, you know, Liz and Tenero Z pre-travel for the US. You know, it's really, really tough to go and watch your teammates compete on a team that you should have been on and that you should have been competing, but that is horses, and it was heartbreaking. And I've no doubt their day will come.
Well, I think you're right for a moment before we talk about Australia and France, because I think they're both worthy of a quick mention. France, I think France have shown incredible strength and depth to be able to essentially deliver their second team. It is really their backup team. To get them into that place, I think, is incredible. They will have a stronger team, I would expect, for the European Championships than they did for the Olympics, and they've managed to come home with a medal. I think it's a big achievement from them. Australia, yeah, I think just a performance built on cross-country jumping. You touched on, Nicole, and it's part of the Australia and France conversation, the riders that weren't there, the riders that didn't make it. You know, Australia were without Chris to begin with. Chris Burton, like, would have been one of the kind of the cornerstones of that Australian team in terms of, you know, in terms of his rating, in terms of his experience, in terms of what he could have brought to that team. It would have been huge. Probably wouldn't have pushed him close enough to the Brits, but, you know, he is someone that could have absolutely been an individual medal contention. Tom Carlisle, as you say, from France, the exact same. Liz and De Niro Z would definitely have gone there with a big role to play in the team, and, you know, potentially an individual shot, depending on what way the dressage test went, depending on how the final day for them went. But based on, you know, big performances this year, they were a big loss. I think what's lovely about the US and what's so encouraging is the role that Tammy played and Liz has played, both they're massively disappointed, no doubt. But they're hugely supportive of their teammates. Liz kind of there until she's not there, let's say, just before it. Tammy there all the way through. But I think Tammy held herself very well for someone who can only have, you know, she must be absolutely, you can't but be, Nicole, as a competitor. You can't but be watching that competition thinking, here's what I would do. This is what I would have delivered. Like, after the test she delivered at Kentucky, she couldn't but be watching the Michael Young, you know, 21.1 or whatever it was, thinking, my bomb can deliver that. You know, and he potentially can. The problem is, you can't ever say how it would all go. Michael Young would have said, I can jump clear. You know, basically, you can't really go too far down to what would have happened. But I think Tammy in particular holds herself so well. I think she comes out of the whole experience so well publicly. And I think privately, you can imagine that there is a burning desire now to prove to everybody, to either prove people wrong or prove people right. you know, but she will watch. I think Tammy will play a major role with my bomb on the basis that my bomb stays fit. I think my bomb will play a major role here, and Tammy's kind of big personality will only come on from this experience, whether it's the, you know, inspires her, well, whatever way she takes it. I just don't think she can do anything but come on from this in a big way. So for me, I think having not run, and sometimes it can work out like this, but having not run, I think she'll still be one of the standout horses of the last month. It'll be interesting to see how it works out for them over the next year and, you know, into Pretoni next year, that kind of thing. Can they run enough? Can they get their form good enough? But they'll be big. Before we talk about the three who did very well, I'm interested in what's going to happen there with into my bomb situation.
Yeah, I would say so. I understand the plan is to go to Aachen in September, which will be another journey for the horse. But obviously, he's travelled really well. They'll get him home, give him a break, and then no doubt turn him around to go back to Aachen. And that could see her really in the mix amongst some very, very competitive Germans on home soil. So it'd be very interesting to see. As you say, it is the hardest position to be reserve rider anyway. But to be in that position, normally, once they've done the trot up, you can kind of take a breath and go, okay, well, I'm not needed, so I'm just going to throw myself into supporting my teammates. Well, obviously, Tokyo was very, very different. You could have had the call up at any point. And I don't think the team of three, actually, in terms of substitutions and the top teams and the cross-country influence, had quite as much of effect as we thought it might. But it's a tough position to be in. And there were some riders that held themselves so beautifully. And Tammy, certainly one of them, Ros Cantor for the Brits, you know, a number of them that didn't get required, that weren't required, that were brilliant. And I've no doubt it will have just stoked their fire to come out and be bigger and better and to put some results on the board after this. Let's talk the US team, because they finished in sixth place, which is their best championship performance, I want to say, since 2004. I'm going to double check that now. I'll double check that in a second. But I think there is a balance between, on paper, three of the combinations added a few penalties, both cross-country time and in the show jumping. However, I would say they delivered three exceptionally solid clear cross-country rounds. And that was very much, you know, the target team of three. You need to have those clear rounds on the board, because you absolutely weren't getting near the podium with cross-country penalties. I think there is a huge amount to take building on this team for the next sort of 2 years, World Equestrian Games next year and then beyond into Paris. And there's some horses that will be very much featured in the next couple of years that will have been driven by this sort of performance. Oh, yeah. So what was your take on it? I thought there was a lot to like, and yes, you can always be a little bit disappointed that it wasn't a clear round inside the time, but it was a hell of a improvement on some of the past recent championship performances.
Yeah, I think it's one of those. So I think the first thing is the target in a three from three competition has to be to get your three cross-country jumping clears. And then it's to do it with a reasonable degree of speed so that you're not losing kind of 20 time. And then you might as well have had a 20 jumping penalties and been fast, if you know what I mean. So to do it with reasonable speed, to deliver solid dressage scores, as we're talking about, the Olympic records are like the Olympic finishing scores are in those kind of three teams of 30. But if you're able to get to kind of three team, you know, if you're able to get three scores of what, 35 or below, 34 below, you're probably going to win a medal. So yeah, we all know that they can do dressage tests below 34. They had to go over there and jump clear to stay in contention, and they did that. I think they'll all be a little bit disappointed with the show jumping. Probably in particular, Z, you'd say, is a horse that has shown us very good show jumping form, would have been amongst the top rated in the field. But any horse, as you know, as we've talked about, can have a rail. I don't think anyone can be too hard on a horse having a rail. I don't think anyone has gone in there and had a disaster. Only six teams managed to get all three of their riders home without jumping penalties. It'll be, off the top of my head, it's Britain, Germany, Australia, and France.
Germany didn't.
Sorry, Germany.
It was Great Britain, Australia,
France, France,
New Zealand. Yeah. New Zealand, the US.
And China. Didn't China do it?
Yeah.
But with a lot of time penalties.
Yeah.
Firstly, I think that is something to build on. That's your kind of key cornerstone to build on, having your three jumping clears. That's never a given. It's only when that happens that you begin, that you kind of get the license to begin to start taking off, well, how can we improve our first phase score? How can we improve our show jump? You've got to have something to build from. It didn't turn, I mean, it actually turned out to be a tricky enough, what was it, about 50, it was about 50% to jumping clear rate. So it's no guarantee, really, you know, that you're, it turned out to be, yeah, just over 1 in 2, 53% jump clear. You know, compare that to like one of the toughest we've ever had was Rio, which was 41. You know, before that, one of the most talked about was Con Weg, was 43%. London was 68% clear rate, one of the easier Olympics. So 53, it's somewhere in between London, which was 68, and Rio, which was 41. So kind of sitting in between the two of those, a little bit closer to the difficult side of that. It's no guarantee that they were going to get their clears. That was the first job. They delivered that. Can you take marks off in the first phase? Yes, of course you can. You can always take marks off in the first phase. At what cost? I think they'll be, in terms of maybe time penalties, in terms of maybe your jumping penalties, in terms of where you're spending your training, I think there's a little bit more chance in terms of your, can you jump clear or can you not in the final day? I think they all did a good job on the final day. All of them went through into the second round of jumping. I don't think their place has really moved a whole lot between the two. I think their placing's pretty much held up between the two phases generally as to position wise where they finished. I don't think any of them will be disappointed. Maybe you prep for, if you think of what you're prepping for, if you had had a tougher cross country, it might have taken more people out and your three clears become even more influential.
I think that's a really good point, because I think that was the, everybody expected three clears to be almost nigh on impossible. And if they'd have got three clears then, pre-games, I would have said three clear rounds cross country with solid amount of time penalties, all single figures, you should be in the hunt for a team medal, probably the bronze. But I would have really thought that it would have knocked a few more teams out of that, because there's only the teams, the likes of Team GB and Germany, who were so low scoring in the first phase that could have afforded a 20 penalties to have still been in the hunt with a medal. And I think that it just didn't play out like that.
It's fine margins, though, Nicole. Like, you think the three rails on the final day don't get talked about that much, because fine, it does sometimes take a bit of a gloss off those rails, but I don't think any of us looked at the rails in the same way where you're like, oh my God, they were so costly. But if you take that 12 away, what are you down to, like 1:12 finish, maybe somewhere in that region? And then, you know, if you can shave off any time plus one or two marks off their dressage, like their dressage were all probably about par for them. Like, I don't think anyone beat their dressage expecteds by too much, if at all. They all performed pretty much as expected. Now, to be honest, that was actually pretty good. I would have been very happy with where the US were after dressage, because a lot of the other teams performed worse than they're expected. So I think they were in a very good place. I actually, if I'm honest, they were a better team of jumpers than the French show jumpers. And they were within two rails at one point. So like the first rail that fell put them three rails away. And then the French jumped clear, which was probably less expected. French only had one rail, I think, between the three riders, which we would have had them for probably at least two, probably three. And we would have had the US to all jump clear. I actually think it would have been, it maybe was a lot closer than it looks on paper. The French did better. The US did slightly worse. The most important thing, if you were looking kind of over the last 2 years and looking into the next 2 years, I would say it's process. You know, like a couple of years ago, you weren't seeing US horses going out that often and finishing below scores of 32. you know, in 2020, an awful lot of them did. You weren't seeing US horses like really going head to head very competitively against each other. Like Kentucky was brilliant to go and watch them all. First phase, cross country phase, show jumping, like they all had to go out and compete hard against each other. I think the next couple of years will be very interesting. Perhaps they begin to adopt more of the approach that we've seen a little bit in the UK, probably via Chris Bartle, because it was always and was previously in Germany where they run to win. You know, they don't run to prep, they run to win. So they get used to winning, they get used to being competitive, they get used to championship pressure, even though they're in Carolina, even though they're at, you know, wherever it may be, Great Meadow, they're competing as if they're in, you know, a big championship. That's how the Germans run at Marbach and Croyth and Aachen and Le Moulin. And the Brits have begun to do that at Bicton and Blenheim and Blair. And they run to win more and more. You saw that a little bit more in 2020 when you suddenly had De Niro Z, My Bomb, Van Diver, Luke 140, Setzerleg Z, Carlchen, RF Cool Play. You know, you began to see them all have to go up against each other because they're all close. There's probably 10 US horses who there's actually very little in between. So as you go into 2022, I think you now have the opportunity to go back to probably 10 different riders or 8 different riders at least. Top riders, you know, people who weren't at this, top riders like Szymanski and Lauren Nicholson and people like this, who you're able to say, like, you think like Hannah Sue Burnett, Brannigan, you know, Ariel Grald is there as well. Like, how many of them are there now that you can say, there's not, you're not that far off this. Run to win. Put, like, make me make the call. Give me sub 32s. Run and show me sub 32 finishes. They won't, you can't be ignored with them. And I think if you can breed that atmosphere, Knickers, of kind of that competitive but also collegiate environment, I think there's something special building there. You don't want to always be building. At some point it has to happen. But I think this was a great championship along the way for them. They've always been part of the big guns. And it just feels like they're close now to potentially what France did this time. Their first three came out, their second three came in. You didn't see a whole lot of difference.
I agree. I think actually this weekend, Tokyo is a turning point because we're, 7 years off a home Olympic Games in LA. And you've got another Olympics. You've got two major championships in the next 2-3 years. You'll have had 3 championships in 4 years for the US, which, you know, builds a degree of momentum as well in terms of major championship competition. And I think that the team are very much working to build that going into LA 2028, but we'll see some very good results along the way. And I'm very excited about what can bring. There's some really young horses as well. Luke 140 for Boyd Martin, who's a double 4-star long format winner. You've got the likes of Will Fordry and Mama's Magic Way, who are one of the travelling reserves, who's only a 10-year-old. Will Coleman's off the record is only a 12-year-old as well. There's some really, really nice, talented horses. Ariel Gold, who you mentioned there, that was the best 5-star performance at Le Moulin this year on the podium in third since, I think, going back to 2012, bar Boyd Martin at
Burley as well, wasn't it?
A couple of years ago, and that was at Burley. That was at Burley for
2014, was it?
2012 it was. And I'm trying Manoir de Canville, Sinead Halpin, that was the one. Sinead Maynard. So, you know, there's some really, really nice horses, and they will all start to, they all are putting pressure on one another to just watch those marginal gains. I think it's a big turning point. They got the 3 clear rounds cross country, and they will start to really, really chip away and get better and better. Let's talk about just briefly the individual champion, because Julia Krajewski, Amanda Bonneville took the individual title. So the gold medalist has been with Germany now going back all the way to 2008. And that is 4 Olympic Games on the trot. And Julia took it here. I think it was her first time, first of all, Olympic eventing champion, which was incredible. And she was riding a mare, which was just superb. But she also, I think if you'd have looked at the German combinations in the lineup, one, she had had a real surge of form this year, but also there's been a degree of tough luck behind her journey to this championship as well.
Yeah, what a journey it's been. She is the most incredible ambassador for our sport. I think what's interesting, we've talked to a lot of people over the last week or so, Nicole, through the podcast and through various different interviews that we've been doing with people on the ground in Tokyo and different teams, and everybody has come back and said, you know what, can I just say one thing about the individual medal? I'm really glad Julia won it. She's hugely popular, but she's hugely popular because she carries herself, and by extension of that, she carries our sport so well. She has faced, since 2016, we've talked about this on a couple of different occasions, but since 2016, she has faced incredible pressure and adversity, and she has kept going. And if ever we needed an advertisement or a reminder in a sport like our sport, just to keep going and to stay at it and to stay with it, like, Julia Krajewski is the most, like, for her to become the first Olympic champion is that inspirational moment, is that inspirational character that lots of people will have to look at now. You think of the impact that Karen O'Connor had in the US, that Pippa Fundle had in the UK. Julia Krajewski is going to do that across Europe. You know, 2016, she went to the Olympics. She was subbed in very late in the day. She had a problem cross country, having had a very good start. She went home, and for the rest of 2016, she was written about in the mainstream press in Germany, which is rare enough for eventing, but she was written about as, you know, definitely her character being questioned as to whether she was able for it. Like, how often have we seen that? You know, is she able for it? A question that's not always asked of the boys, but is easily asked of the girls at times like that. Is she able for it? 2016. 2017, Strigom disqualified very controversially, and to, you know, in the feeling of most people involved in the sport, kind of on a technicality, a very honest person who ever since has kind of traveled with cameras and all sorts to ensure that the horses can never be tampered with, so to speak. 2018, Nicole, you have Tryon cross country, doesn't go to plan. 2018, the big one late that year, she loses the ride on her top horse on Chipmunk. Again, you know, why? And not just, you know, oh, it's awful to lose the ride on a horse, but like on a horse as good as Chipmunk and to your teammate, to Michael, you know, one of the top riders, the double Olympic champion at this point. Who wants the double Olympic champion to take over their horse? He's probably going to be really good on it. he would be. That's just 2016. I'm bringing you into 2018, Nicole. I'm bringing you to 2019. And like, the story keeps going.
Yeah, it does. And do you know what? She would have gone into having had the disappointment of Chipmunk, because it's bound to be disappointment going to Michael Young. Admittedly, you know, still staying within German Federation. She would have gone into the European Championships in Moulin, a home Europeans, in the back end, so the August, I think it was, of 2019, as one of the favourites for an individual medal. And it was kind of, they were going to go head to head. And there was a lot of sort of talk around a really, really strong German team with Ingrid Klimke and Hale Bob on there as well, and had to pull out through injury. So that was a real disappointment. But then we obviously had that thing called COVID that came and changed the world. So 2020 was very much back end of the year. They came out and were in incredible form, Samuel Iduto and Julia, and would have been the favourites again for the individual medal. So she'd sort of had this huge roller coaster, and it was going to be a really, really strong German team. You had Mickey and Chipmunk, you and Samuel Iduto, who would have been an individual medal contender. Then you had Ingrid Klimke with the choice of her rides, Hale Bob or Asher P. And unfortunately, you know, the bad luck struck again, and Samurai Dutau had a really bad injury, and that resulted in him losing an eye. And unfortunately, he was retired from competition in February. So if you'd have spoken to Julia at that time, you know, her Olympic dream was basically over, and it had been this absolutely heart-wrenching roller coaster to get to that point. She then went to Saumur, the big French long format four star, in May, and went up against basically the entire French team, who that they use that as one of their major selection trials. And Amanda Benneville just looked like she'd come out this year and she had upped her game and was a very, very impressive winner. So everybody sort of started talking, and I think we spoke on the Eventing podcast how impressive a performance it was. Then she went to Le Moulin, to the national championships at four-star short level, which was the final German selection trial. And she pulled out a really impressive runners-up position after the first two phases to Michael Young, had a pole down, finished top five, but that secured her selection. But that was a last-minute charge to the German team. And you just... I have cried so many times watching any of the stories, and there's some incredible ones, listeners. Go and watch them across social media, because do you know what? Sometimes in eventing, there's something that really gets to you, and the heartbreak and the roller coaster to get to that point has been absolutely remarkable. And it was a massively well-deserved individual gold medal. And I know that a lot of people have been absolutely rooting for her and were absolutely delighted. Don't get me wrong, I would have loved a British winner, but I could not, I wouldn't wish it any different to Julia's performance. She was absolutely class. She deserved to win. And she really, really stood out and delivered under a serious amount of pressure that final show, jumping around. She couldn't afford a pole down, and the horse can jump. My goodness, she can jump, even though it was the second round of jumping. So do you know what? It was a blooming brilliant Olympic Games, Dee, and we could talk about it for hours and hours and hours. Just one thing before we go, and we're going to have to go in a second, but favorite memory, highlight for you of the Games?
Picking gold medalists is boring, but Nicole, I'm not joking. I'm almost crying when I think about how great the Julia situation is for her, for her team, for her sport, for her sport, for our sport. You know, like, even in that just Samurai Dutau, like, her father passes away as well. Like, she's had an awful time. She kept going and she kept going. She has always been alongside these top riders, as you say, like Ingrid, Sandra, Michael, as she's coming through, you know, Andreas Dabowski, Dirk Schrader, like top German riders. And she's been in there, kind of the youngest one in there, questioned and questioned and questioned, disappointment, 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 kept going, kept going. She's the Olympic champion, the individual Olympic champion. She's so humble. She keeps her head down. She works hard. She's got time for everybody. I just think there couldn't be a better moment about these games than looking at Julia bring home that medal.
Yeah, it was amazing. And listeners, if you're feeling emotionally sturdy enough, go and watch some of those moments. I mean, the horse comes off the lorry onto a red carpet when she gets home. Julia's dog meets her at the airport. I mean, just grab a box of tissues and go and enjoy it. But look, it has been an absolutely incredible Tokyo Olympic Games. We hope that you guys have enjoyed it. A little trot down memory lane as well, looking back on what was an incredible Games, one that we thought many on occasion that we weren't going to have. So look, it's been superb, and we can't wait for the next major championship. And do you know what? We only have to wait 12 months because there is a World Equestrian Games in Brittany next year. And I have no doubt that the US team will be building and building and building. They've put in a really, really solid performance in Tokyo. Lots to look forward to. Dee, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure as always.
Thanks, Nicole.
Listeners, thank you. We hope you've enjoyed it. Don't forget, you can go back and catch all of the US Eventing's coverage of Tokyo. There's loads of great articles, quotes. There'll be a big write-up as well coming soon, so go and look out for that. But for now, we will be going to take a deep breath, and we'll be back very soon with more on the USEA official podcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the USEA official podcast. If you have any suggestions or feedback, then we would love to hear from you.
Get in touch through any of our social media platforms at US Eventing, and don't forget to subscribe on your preferred podcast platform to make sure you don't miss an episode.